Ryan Stanton here with ASEP Frontline, joined today by Dr. Richard Gordon, and we're going to talk about a little bit of research. And with everything with COVID that's going around, I think one of the next big phases is going to be the research, what we learn, how do we move forward, and how do we prepare if something like this happens again, because I feel like with a lot of the research associated with COVID, we've been flying by the seat of our pants, and EMF has committed $100,000 to research, but we also have other research that's going on and that will continue, and so we wanted to talk about that as well as opportunities to get access to that research as we move forward through the rest of 2020. So Dr. Gordon, thanks for joining us here on the front line. Yeah, so tell us about the research and how the impact that COVID has presented and the curveball it's thrown towards the research community.
Yeah, absolutely. So COVID has really shaken the foundation of acute care research across the country, around the world, obviously. In December and January, we were clipping along doing all of our usual research projects at our representative institutions, and then all of a sudden comes along this contagion, and we have to take a step back and look at all the research we're doing. How are we going to do this? How are we going to preserve PPE and conduct research? How are we going to consent people? A lot of our research associates are undergraduate level or medical school level who are helping us collect research. Is it safe to have them in the emergency department? Weighing the risk and benefits of that. As PPE was clearly becoming short, it became obvious we could not provide PPE for this, and so therefore we could not have our research associates there with us. So we are looking at having the physicians themselves consent. Each time you enter that room, you are burning some element of your PPE, and so how do we consent these people? Maybe we should go on more of an electronic format, and so that's something that a lot of people have shifted to, is using iPads or FaceTime or Zoom or whatever to do the consent. People are taking a look at doing waivers of consent where possible. And in many cases, frankly, a lot of research has just had to shut down because it was not able to safely move forward. So a lot of institutions are trying to boot up now, but I would say that over the last month or two, research has largely come to a stop for all of the reasons that I highlighted.
With regard to COVID-19, it is a new contagion, new pathogen. And as we like to say in a lot of our podcasts, as of a few months ago, there were no experts on COVID-19. How has that presented in terms of opportunity for research and opened up new avenues for not only current researchers, but in the realm of research in terms of opening the doors for emergency medicine research into COVID, our response, and the path forward?
Absolutely. So obviously, COVID opens up a lot of opportunity for research. It's actually, I would say, more important than ever to be conducting research. We're laying the foundation for the next pandemic, or maybe even the next time COVID presents itself in the near future. I'm willing to bet you that the next pandemic we face won't be 100 years from now. And so those that come after us are going to be looking back on this experience. So this is an opportunity to lay the foundation for that. So it's extremely important. Obviously, there has been a load of grant funding that has been made available. And so EMF is a great example, over $100,000 in grant funding contributed to COVID research. So application deadlines for that are in June, and I would encourage as many people as possible, particularly young investigators, to submit grant applications. And also laying the groundwork for how to conduct research in a pandemic. People were really caught off guard on how to collect data, as I kind of highlighted previously. So there's opportunity now to be a part of, through ASEP, SAM, to be a part of the research committees to help get your voice heard and contribute on how to be better prepared to collect research data in the future.
We do see this as a great opportunity. As I mentioned, EMF moving forward their dedication to the research, but one of the challenges this puts in before us is exactly what you had already somewhat mentioned, which is that a lot of research is becoming very challenging to do with the disruption of the researchers themselves, but also PPE and interaction and consent and all of those types of things. What adjustments are having to take place in order to really adjust our typical operations for getting the word out, getting research out, getting research published and presented versus what we've had in the past? I mean, typically we've got meetings all over the place. We have ways to, you know, poster presentations. We have all kinds of stuff that's out there, but this is clearly going to put present a kink in terms of the traditional approach to getting that research out there and getting some traction on some of the results and findings of these researchers.
Yeah, so, you know, it's a blessing and a curse to be a chair of this year's research forum that's coming up, 2020. I think more a blessing than anything, in that it's an opportunity for us to help usher in the next iteration of the research forum. Those who came before me have done an excellent job just making the research forum better and better, and this is another opportunity to make it a little better. So, you know, we are taking every maneuver that we can to be prepared to host some kind of hybrid research forum. I'm not sure exactly what that's looking like, but we're already looking into it to be able to host people from around the world with their research, and also have international viewers. Maybe people who even traditionally cannot attend the conference will be able to attend now, or maybe those that are just limited due to the pandemic who would not attend because of that, we can now have them on board. So we'll, our researchers' research better spread. We'll have a larger audience. So we're looking at doing more of, again, more of a virtual component to that, whether that will be entirely virtual or whether it would be partial in person and in partial virtual will remain to be seen. But I think it's going to, I think we're going to make a lot of steps forward because of this pandemic.
With COVID upending, really a lot of the processes that we've seen and a lot of the, especially within the research arena, and we start to get a lot of these things going, is there options and ways for researchers to really kind of get together, work on ways of strategies and solutions and opportunities to kind of continue to move the ball forward, not just with COVID, like COVID-related research, but other related research, ways that we can eventually, you know, work together to find solutions to what will likely be a disruption that pushes on through 2020 and likely at least portions of 2021 as well.
So the first thing that comes to mind when I hear this question is actually social media, which is also a blessing and a curse. I think social media is a very powerful tool. And there is a lot of interesting ideas and hypotheses that originate there. And I think we can glean a lot from that, but it is important that we take those hypotheses and then test them. Sometimes these ideas, they try to make their way to standard of care, as we've seen maybe with hydroxychloroquine. It would be a great example. A lot of the quote unquote evidence for that originated in social media. So on the flip side, there is a lot of opportunity to interact with research leaders around the world and bounce ideas off of them, see their interpretation of the literature and compare that with your own interpretations of the literature. And when we have that great randomized controlled trial that comes out, and I know there are some in the works, I think you'll see those results very rapidly distributed around the world. So the easy thing to do to get involved with research today is to pop on Twitter and kind of take a look at the work that's going on, or Facebook or social media platforms like that would be an easy place to start. Obviously, check within your institution. Invariably, there's going to be research committees that you can be a part of. I'm part of our research committee here at McGovern Medical School at UT Health. And obviously, our professional organizations, ASEP, SAEM, both have research committees. And that's how I honestly got involved with research, was just joining the ASEP research committee about 6 years ago.
I'm glad you mentioned social media and some of the things that have come from social media. Because I wanted to get your feel and thoughts as somebody that is in the research realm. When you see things get pushed out, one of the initial studies that came out as a potential treatment for COVID, I actually had to send something back and I said, did I, because I, you know, I'm not a strong, you know, interpreter and breaker down of research. I depend on people that are much smarter and much more detailed on statistics and research than I. So I was concerned that I missed something, and I said, hey, am I reading this correctly, that this study is based on an N of one? It was tested on one person and now is being presented as a potential treatment for this. When you're seeing this stuff coming out, was it initially the remdesivir and then the hydrochloroquine, and now we're back to the rem, and then we're hearing some now, as even asked this morning by a media resource on marijuana, and then talking about the potential of the of things like Viagra and Cialis. You know, looking at those, your thoughts, I mean, because you're absolutely right. Social media and the internet allows for quick dissemination and processing of research, but so little of it has actually been broken down in terms of the quality of the research, and so few people can actually do that to understand what the take-home message from the research is and whether it's even worth consideration. When you see what we've been seeing for COVID-19, does your head explode, or do you just, or how do we kind of process all of this information from a healthcare standpoint, especially when it's almost like the TV-based medication ads, where it's really the lay public that's pushing it and saying, "See, there's a treatment right here. That's what we need to be doing right now."
Well, I think the first thing that I do for myself when I see these things come across social media is check myself and recognize that there is a scale here. There's an emotional versus logical scale. And so our emotions are tempered by a lot of things. We're quote unquote healers. And so we want to do something for our patients. Additionally, we are in the firing line here. And by extension, our families are in the firing line. So we are probably more emotional than we typically would be. So we are very susceptible to positive data. Whether it's a true positive or a false positive, we want to believe that something is going to work. So we have to check ourselves first. The next thing is ask yourself the question, who did the study and what are their motivations for doing it? So with remdesivir, the big study that came out about that, well, first and foremost, it was Gilead who did it. Gilead, like a lot of pharmaceutical companies, they have interest in seeing these studies succeed. And so you'll hear this term clinical equipoise. Is there clinical equipoise in that study? Probably not, because they've invested a lot of money in the production of that drug. So that should make you skeptical first and foremost. The next question you should ask yourself, is there a control arm? And if so, was there randomization? If there was not a control arm, and that's one of the problems with a lot of these studies that you see coming out now, is more observational. There's really no control arm. And so it's really hard to draw reliable conclusions when there is no control arm, especially in a condition that has a, 90, 98, 99% survival rate. It's really hard to draw conclusions without a control arm. And finally, the number of patients that are in the study. Now, you mentioned N of one. This is effectively a case report. That's by definition low quality science. So it's going to be really hard to draw any conclusions. I'm not saying it's worthless. I think people need to get their experiences out there, but we cannot jump over to standard of care based on a study with that few people. So we need large, adequately powered studies to answer the question that was originally posed.
I think we're seeing a lot of the immersion of the armchair researcher right now with regard to COVID. You know, a lot of people seeing things and doing things and putting it out as treatment or, you know, an opinion or a theory as a fact. And that's one of the challenges, is that the public see physician, doctor, you know, whether it's a physician, doctor or not, see that out there and trust it as being factual information. And that's hard to parse out. And I feel like over the last couple of weeks, I've spent a lot more time, you know, shooting down theories and opinions that have been stated as fact and policy over other things like that. And so I think that's going to be an important thing as we move forward. And actually, a consideration for science is, how do we bring back or ensure the integrity with this modern world of rapid and almost immediate information dissemination ensuring that the scientific vigor is actually still there to ensure that the data that's being presented is worth being presented. Unless it's being presented as you mentioned, an N-of-1 being a case report or as an opinion or as a theory or as something that needs to be further investigated, because that's exactly what we had talked about with a lot of these things. If you bring it as an opinion or a theory and we can look into it and kind of see if it stands up to scientific muster, then there may be fact within that opinion. But that's the challenging aspect that we're facing right now, especially with something that's evolving as quickly as COVID-19. We wanted to, before we wrapped up today, we want to make sure that we let folks know about where we're going with research, because one of the biggest things associated with the Scientific Assembly or annual meeting, which this year's ASEP 20 set for Dallas, is the research forum, a huge way to get that information out, and to always a very big event that takes place at each annual meeting. Talk to us a little bit, one, about, you know, the plans. You've mentioned some of them in terms of the virtual aspects and those types of things, but then also the deadline of people have things they want to put out there, of getting that in for consideration.
Yeah, absolutely. So the research forum, again, planned to be in Dallas, obviously 2020. The first thing that we're doing is moving the deadline back to June 11th. So we're giving our researchers a little bit more time to get their research in and submitted. You can go to the ASEP website and navigate to the research forum page, and you will see an OASIS link there, and please come submit your research. We definitely want to see that. And so 4 p.m. Central Time, 5 p.m. Eastern Time on June 11th will be the deadline. You know, a lot of our colleagues who were hosting conferences in the spring really got blindsided by all of this. And so there was a very unfortunate situation where a lot of our researchers had a hard time getting their research out, because conferences were paralyzed by the pandemic. So we're trying to be forward thinking and be prepared for any situation that would arise in the fall. We're fully prepared to have a live conference, but if need be, we can go virtual or host some kind of hybrid conference. We are guaranteeing that we will have a platform for people to be able to present their research. So we don't want anybody holding back out of fear that they won't be able to present their research. Now, COVID specific, if we have enough submissions enough research that is acceptable, we plan to have a COVID specific section of the research forum. So those of you that are out there doing COVID research right now, please, our COVID-related research, please, and you're prepared to present or submit, please do that. We would love to have a COVID-specific section of the research forum. But also non-COVID research, we will be back to doing our usual research forum. Excellent event. However we end up doing that, whether it's virtual or in person or a little bit of both. And we have our Bach lecture, which is going to be presented this year by Jeff Klein, and he's going to be presenting on the value of emergency research. Additionally, we have our state of the arts. We're going to have a session on the future of emergency medicine, which I think that's probably perfect timing on that one. We're going to have a couple of our FOMED disruptors, Salim Razi, Daniel McCollum, will come and break down some research for us live. And we're also going to have a session on the value of emergency care as well. So we have three state-of-the-art sessions lined up, as well as award sessions and kind of the EMF luncheon, the usual research forum. We are fully prepared to move forward with that. So we're very excited about it and really hoping for a good number of submissions. So please submit away.
You know, a reminder, as I mentioned, deadline back, that is still available. Opportunities through EMF for COVID-related research that may or may not be ready for the research forum coming up. But I mean, it's a great consideration, a great opportunity for young researchers to get involved, get your foot in the door, because that's always one of the biggest things is, you know, what to research, and something's just fallen into your lap. I think that we need plenty of information on, you know, not only of how we've handled it, but the findings and then what we can learn in terms of moving forward. So, you know, we've Dr. Richard Gordon, How can folks get in touch with you if they have any questions? And again, mention the access points on the ACEP site for the research form.
Yeah, absolutely. So it's the easiest way to navigate for a submission would be to go to the ACEP website, search for research forum. You'll find a link to ACEP 2020 in Dallas. From there, click on that, obviously, and then you'll see a link for submissions. It'll have OASIS in the link. You open that up, and it's pretty self-explanatory from there. In terms of direct contact, you can find me on Twitter at R. Gordon Jr. And you can also find me just at directed email. I'm pretty responsive through email at richard.d.gordon@uth.tmc.edu.
All right. Dr. Gordon, thank you very much for joining us here on the front line. And if you have any comments, thoughts, or questions from us, feel free to contact me at youreverydaymedicine@gmail.com. That's youreverydaymedicine@gmail.com or at everydaymed on Twitter. And until next time, I'm Dr. Ryan Stanton. Stay safe, be careful, and let's get that research in. Thanks for joining us. This has been some ACEP Frontline.